Coming up on Chasing the Natty, we're going to catch you all up on the biggest items from fall camp so far. We'll be covering a lot of injury situations and how they'll potentially shift rankings and strategies going into the season for college fantasy. In addition, we'll be touching on some of those quarterback competitions that are finally beginning to settle themselves out. We've got all of that and more coming right after this. This is Chasing the Natty, a college fantasy football podcast. All right, welcome in everyone. This is Jared Palmgren, host of the Chasing the Natty podcast. I hope you guys are having a wonderful ride to your work on this Monday morning. We are the College Fantasy Football Podcast on the Campus of Canton Podcast Network. You can find us on all of your podcast feeds and on YouTube every Monday morning during the season at 6 a.m. sharp. If you want to support the great work we're doing here, head on over to campusofcanton.com, subscribe there with any of our phenomenal tiers. We have content ranging on all sorts of college football games, whether it's CFF, Devy, C2C, College IDP, College DFS, Underdog Best Balls. Really, if you play it, we've got content, whether that's tools, rankings, everything you need to succeed. If you want to get in touch for whatever reason, you can find me in the show on Twitter. I'm at CFF underscore Jared. The show is at Chasing the Natty, and the handsome fellow joining us as a guest today is Mr. Chris Benzine, CFB analyst over at rotowire.com. You guys probably know their work. If you have ever seen one of those news blurbs on Fantrax or seen those preseason projections, Chris has probably had a good hand in those. You can find him on Twitter at crispy272002 on Twitter. Chris, welcome to the show, man. How you doing, man?
Good. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk some preseason news. And there's been a lot of it so far this offseason, I think.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's always fun in college fantasy. We think we have a handle on everything. We research, we put it into work on figuring out all 134 teams before the season. We think some of the depth charts are pretty much figured out by the end of spring camp, and then fall camp hits us, and well, we're having to readjust everything here, which is why if you're playing like season-long redraft leagues, I actually do recommend you try to push those off as late as possible for the most part. I have fun doing best balls all off season. Do not get me wrong, y'all, but there's a reason why I keep those very low, like entry fees and everything, because I know for a fact there's just so much that changes by the time we actually get around here to our actual leagues. Speaking of, Chris, are you busy with drafts right now? I know we're just getting finished up with our FSGA college fantasy draft, which you and I were in the finals last year. You were one Kadon Salter week 13 performance away from taking home that crown. Fortunately for me, I was able to take home that crown. But how are you kind of adjusting with all this fall camp news coming into the season here with all your drafts?
Yeah, I mean, I think you do have to be super reactive to that kind of thing. Like, I think in our FSGA draft, the middle of the draft, our slow draft portion, is when one of the early injuries we're going to talk about here occurred, and you could clearly see a reaction of another player getting drafted. If you want, I don't know if you want to burst the bubble, but yeah, it was like Baxter and Trey Wisner just got drafted almost immediately in that draft because of that. So yeah, there's definitely, you definitely have to be on top of the news when you're doing drafts, especially slow drafts, live drafts. It's probably difficult to keep on top of news, and there isn't as much news going on in a live draft, but yeah, when you're doing slow drafts, definitely keep on top of news and be watching that because it can really affect where players are going in drafts. And there can definitely be some quick steals if you happen to be on the clock when injuries occur. There can be some steals in the drafts that you wouldn't have gotten otherwise.
No, I definitely agree. You got to be on top of things, but also like the other part of this is, I think, you know, also having some discernment on not overreacting to every little bit of news that is out there. I think one good example is a couple of the injuries today. I mean, it seemed like, oh no, they went down in practice. Maybe that's going to be a bad thing. Very quickly figure out it's a very minor thing. Could end up still being big, but again, that's kind of where your discernment has to come in. Another example I would say is at Louisville, first day of fall camp, there was a lot of talk about Ja'Cory Brooks having a really good first day of fall camp, and it was like he was Shuck's go-to guy, and him playing on the outside, of course, everybody kind of jumped to that saying like, oh, maybe this is the guy for Louisville this year. I've been a big Chris Bell fan all offseason. He had a lot of the hype in the spring while Brooks kind of faded a little bit during the spring. And I said to myself, I'm like, nope, I'm sticking with Bell. Even though like there's that one good camp report came out about Brooks, for right now I'm sticking with Bell unless I start hearing, again, that steady drumbeat I always talk about. You never change your opinion on players just because of one report. You always got to start listening for that steady drumbeat of guys. So I think that still applies here in the fall. If you're keeping up with fall camp reports every single day, like, that's the kind of stuff you got to be looking for. Don't just look for that one blurb that says like, hey, this dude had a really great day. Looked like a wide receiver one. Might be one of the most dangerous phrases you can come across in fall camp reports, I think, right now, because you got to make sure that it is not just that one day that player looked like the wide receiver one. It is something that you see over and over again.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I've definitely seen numerous occasions, and it's something especially newer players will probably need to learn, is that when you see reports saying, oh, this guy looks like a star today, or this guy had a huge day, it's like you definitely don't want to overreact on just that one report, as you mentioned. You want to make sure that you're seeing a consistent, like, he's been throughout, like, if you see reports saying he's been for the few weeks of camp, he's been a star or something like that, where it's even that you want multiple sources saying that, not just mm-hmm. one. So I think you definitely, as you mentioned, you want to see, make sure you're getting multiple sources giving you the same information saying this guy is clearly going to be a factor for the team this season before you actually make meaningful adjustments to where you're drafting the players.
Yeah, and of course, that's not always the easiest thing, right? This is college fantasy. At the end of the day, one of the biggest drawbacks of college fantasy is that we don't have the beat reporter access like the guys on the NFL side do, right? So you might be sitting here saying like, well, Jared, I only got one beat reporter feeding me information on schools like Hawaii, Utah State, places like that. I'm like, yeah, totally understand. I'm in the same boat. Like, I fully understand. You got to just work with what you got in a lot of the situations. But even more so, like, you base it off of what you have been hearing throughout the entirety of the offseason rather than just one or two fall camp reports. So, yeah. And obviously things do change, right?
And I think you have to kind of assess your willingness for risk. If you're willing True. To be a risky player, some people are willing to take the risks. There's definitely spots where you're going to get dividends. The dividends are going to be paid. So there's definitely if I would say maybe don't go full on risk in your rosters when you're fantasy building, because that could really backfire. But there's definitely reasons to take some risks in your draft process. So I think you got to kind of weigh the two. How willing are you to take on risk? Because there could be some situations where it pays off, but then there's also situations where you could, you know, really hurt your fantasy season just from overreacting to some small reports.
Yeah, agreed 100%. All right, I think it's about time we actually start getting into some of these fall camp reports here and kind of analyzing how it's going to impact us moving forward. But first, before we get into that, you guys know me, I got to get a few things off my chest here and promote the great work we're doing over at campusofkenton.com. First and foremost, if you have not gotten our CFF guide for whatever reason, go check that out right now. It is $20 at campusofkenton.com. Covers all 134 teams. It includes depth charts for all of the teams. It includes player analysis for, again, off the top of my head, 48 quarterbacks, 60 running backs, 72 wide receivers, and 36 tight ends. We have schedule analysis. We got defensive analysis in there. It is basically everything you need when it comes to putting things together for your CFF leagues this year. I know a ton of people in my home league and a lot of my leagues have basically using this as their Bible going into the season, because again, they don't have time to research all these teams. This is the place to go. So go check that out if you have not already. In addition, check out the Defending the Natty podcast. It's our monthly podcast on our Chasing the Natty feed. That is for CFF Dynasty. It's myself and Nate Marquise. Our last episode, we predicted the 2025 first round. Kind of, you know, taking out a crystal ball, thinking about what kind of players could break out this season, things like that. As of right now, we won't have one for August, but we will be back during the season to kind of give you guys updates on players to be looking out for there. In addition, if you are somebody who's getting ready for your draft, a great way to do that is to go check out our CFF draft live streams that we have put out on YouTube. We are done with those for the year, but we have 8 of them out there for you this year. We had tons of great guests we were able to bring on this year. Tons of fun. They go 30 rounds deep. We talk tons of different players in every single one of them. So I would highly recommend go check that out before you get into your drafts this year. All right. With all that being said, Chris, let's talk about some player news here. And we got 3 news stories here up on the screen. We'll talk about these one at a time. And the first one, clearly probably the biggest news. It's a little bit of old news at this point, but unfortunately when this news broke, we were in the middle of our Crash Course series, so we weren't really covering live news at the time. So here we are reacting to it now. CJ Baxter, running back out of Texas, the presumed RB1 for Steve Sarkisian this year, is out for the season, unfortunately. And it looks like that this answers a lot of questions for the Texas backfield. There were some worries about Baxter not really breaking away from the pack with Blue. Obviously, the staff liked him last year. He was the first running back out of all the running backs last year to actually get a carry for Texas last year, if that tells you how much this staff trusted him. But we weren't really seeing, at least from fall camp reports, that next step up. So I started out the offseason with Baxter being as my RB5. He kind of fell down to RB17 for me, just because, again, he wasn't breaking away from Blue. Well, now he's out for the season. And that, in my opinion, just completely clears up this backfield. We got Jadon Blue now, who I wasn't even really drafting a whole lot of. I maybe took a shot on him every once in a while if I tagged Baxter as well. But now, to me, he's the clear RB1 in this offense. He's risen to RB6 for me on the year. So, Chris, how are you kind of reacting to this news? How high are you willing to draft Blue in your leagues? Do you think there's other factors that are in play here? What do you think?
I mean, you obviously know the Texas backfield. Sarkisian generally does like to use multiple backs, but it was a situation, like you mentioned, that Jadon Blue was like the clear number two, like even almost like close to like a 1A, 1B situation. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe not quite in that realm, but somewhat like that. And I don't think that there's any other running back that can do that role of what Blue would have been set to do. So I kind of agree that you're probably jumping Blue higher than where you maybe even had Baxter before, just because there isn't, where, as you mentioned, there isn't that second back that is obvious and ready to just kind of maybe siphon away carries from Blue. So I kind of agree with what you said, that I think we should be moving Blue above where you, wherever you had Baxter in your rankings prior to the injury.
No, I agree. I would agree 100%, right? Because, again, I had Baxter as my RB17, Blue's now my RB6. The only thing I would add there as well, like, again, if you notice, like, I have Blue slightly behind where I had Baxter at first when I thought Baxter was the clear guy back there. Because I do think that Baxter is still the better talent. That's why I was still drafting Baxter in leagues where I could, right? But I think, again, like you said, with this backfield clearly kind of cleared out for Blue to be the main guy here now, I think you have to put him as one of your elite running backs for this year. Because Steve Sarkisian, he's got a 1,000-yard back every single year that he's been a coach in college football. Has not missed a year. And so Blue being the main guy makes a lot of sense there. I saw, you kind of mentioned it earlier, with like people going after Wisner, right? Like Trey Wisner, he's a true freshman back last year. He's going to his second year this year. I don't think that's what we need to be doing, right? Because the reason why Blue was getting drafted so high was because, like you said, there was almost a potential for a 1A, 1B type of situation there. And if Blue just straight up outperformed Baxter, he would take over as that top back for Steve Sarkisian. I don't think there's a world where Wisner is going to be taking over as the top back for Texas unless Blue also gets hurt. And so I think people are drafting Wisner thinking like, oh, well, he just slides into whatever role I thought Blue was going to get. I don't think that's necessarily the case. I think you nailed that part where Like, if you're thinking that Blue as the RB2 was set for, you know, 700 yards, I don't think Wisner's going to be topping much higher than 500-600 yards kind of deal.
Yeah, I mean, I have Wisner, like you're saying, where we moved, it kind of evened out where you had Baxter move down a little bit and you had Blue move up a little bit in the rankings when those two kind of seemed to be both working in tandem. Well, now if you have Blue higher, you can't put Wisner where Blue was because it doesn't make sense to have that combination. You have to have Wisner lower. And even with Wisner, we're not sure. I mean, most likely he's the next guy up, but there's Jared Gibson's also there. I mean, it's not, they also had another injury back there. But yeah, so I mean, Wisner should be probably the next man up, but then there's also, I think Jared Gibson people have talked about too. I don't know that he's going to be there, but there, it's just, I just don't, like you're saying, I don't see him getting the same sort of role that Blue would have had. So you can't put him as high as Blue was unless you really think he's going to play the Blue role, and in that case then you shouldn't have Blue as high in your ranking. So it's depending on what you feel as a player. If you feel like Blue, or if you feel that Wisner is going to take over that Blue role, then maybe you had, then you should have Blue lower down in your rankings then, and you're probably not going to get Blue. But I still think, as I think we're in agreement on that, if you're going to put, we think that Blue is higher on the rankings, and in that for that reason, we got to put Wisner lower, and that's kind of where I have him too. I have him down to like, no, I have Wisner at about number 72 right now, and I'm not even solidified on a number around him, so
I don't have him ranked.
I'm not sure about that. I moved him up there, but I still have. See, I have Blue at 19, and I still think it should be higher. I probably shouldn't have him in the top 15 at least. I think he should be at least the top 15. You have him at obviously number 6, you said, right?
So yeah, number 6.
Yeah, and I can see that definitely being the case, especially with what you're saying, with the way you're saying that he's going to be clear, dominant back in the backfield. And I definitely could see that happening, and I may not end up getting him if he's at that price, but I definitely would say he has to be probably top 15, which I need to move him up a little bit more, in where I just kind of did some projection bumping on him, and then I moved Wisner up. But yeah, if you're going to have if you're going to have Blue at number 6, I could definitely see why you wouldn't have him ranked at all.
And see, I think it's going to be interesting, like looking at Blue's ADP over the next couple of weeks, because again, I've drafted him in the first round since then, but I've also seen some people's home leagues where, you know, if you're drafting with people who aren't like super up to date on everything, right? Like Blue slips can slip quite a bit. I saw somebody still getting Blue in like the 7th, 8th round, even after the injury news. And so, you know, something to keep an eye out there. But again, back to your point on Wisner, right? Like, Jonathan Brooks is RB24 last year. CJ Baxter was a clear RB2 for a good chunk of the season for Texas, and he was RB157. So again, there's not really a role there to have like your clear number two back is going to get, you know, CFF weeks there or anything, unless the first guy goes down. And even then, that helped Baxter last year. So I don't have Wisner ranked at all, and I don't think I am going to be ranking him. I'll put him in my dynasty rankings for sure, just because clearly he's kind of the next guy up there. But like, in terms of redraft, nah, I'll wait until Blue goes down and then pick him up off the waiver wire. Next story here, another Texas running back going down. Somebody, you know, bubble wrap Justice Haynes, because I think somebody's out here trying to take out all of the former five-star freshman running backs from last year. But Reuben Owens, the Texas A&M running back, is out for the year, unfortunately. This is a backfield that I've kind of been back and forth all year. Ethan Sowers and I discussed Owens several weeks ago as a guy that we thought was being heavily underrated there, because one, we thought he fit Colin Klein's system really, really well. And if there was going to be a back that would kind of break away from that committee, you had to bet on the talent of a guy like Reuben Owens, who, again, can do well on the ground and catch balls out of the backfield really, really well there. Well, unfortunately, he's gone now. I had him as my RB63, again, kind of going back to my hesitancy with a potential committee there. That's why I had him so low, even though I like the talent. But obviously, he's gone now. And I've brought Le'Veon Moss into my rankings. I think that if you're going to bet on someone, he's probably the guy, because between him and Amari Daniels, it's interesting, right? Because like Amari Daniels last year got more carries, out efficiencied Le'Veon Moss by a good bit last year, right? And had a better breakaway percentage. There's a lot of things that tell me that Amari Daniels is like a pretty solid back. Problem is, he's older. And then two, if you read a lot of the beat reports, there's just not a lot of mentions of Amari Daniels. It's Le'Veon Moss has kind of been the guy that gets talked about more. Le'Veon Moss got a ton of work in the spring game back then. So it's potentially we've just been sleeping on Le'Veon Moss here. I have brought him into my rankings as my RB74. So a little bit lower than Owens because, again, I liked Owens' talent better. But I'm willing to kind of pivot to Moss being a guy that I'd be willing to take shots on pretty late in drafts. What about you, Chris? How are you tackling this Texas A&M backfield with this Owens news?
Yeah, I mean, as you mentioned, that was something that I, when I was doing my projections, I heard in spring is that just kind of Le'Veon Moss was still there. Like, that's the thing that scared me with Owens a little bit was that, like, the talent was clearly, he's the five-star back. He should be the guy to take over. But then you still heard the noise of Le'Veon Moss still in the mix there, like maybe even working ahead of Owens at certain points. So if that's the case, it would scare me there. But now you take Owens out of the equation. To me, as you say, I would agree that I feel like Moss is the next man up in that backfield. And as you said, not really a ton of mention of Amari Daniels. I think he'll still get some carries. And then EJ Smith's also still there. But I don't see him being a major factor, but he's also in the mix for some carry. So there are some other options in that backfield. So I, as you said, I don't think I'd move him up a ton. Even with where we were last year with Owens and Moss and Daniels, all three got plenty of carries. I don't know that there's going to be a situation where someone just takes over the backfield here unless multiple other injuries occur, then mm-hmm. Maybe I'd be more interested in them if there's like another clearing of the backfield situation but there's just too many here. I think it's probably a clear 1-2 though with Moss and Daniels, but Smith's could get a few carries in there. And if there's anyone I'm targeting, I'm going to go with Moss. But again, like you said, I think I'm going to go a little lower than wherever you had Owens in your rankings.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much the fair way to look at it here. I don't think there's really much else to really to say there. I think if you're willing to take a shot on Owens at the end of your draft, you're probably willing to take a shot on Moss as well. And I think it's still a backfield willing to invest in, right? Because again, Colin Klein was able to give us plenty of great backs at Kansas State the last couple of years. And so if one guy does step up there,
true,
might as well take a shot on him. So yeah, I'm comfortable going after Moss, and honestly, I'm comfortable going after Daniels as well. Like, if you're in a really, really deep draft and you're getting to the end and you just want to take a shot on a guy, I think Daniels is probably the cheaper option out of the two. And given the stats I gave you before about him just being more efficient than Moss last year, maybe you just kind of bet on that. And if it doesn't work out, you drop him after week two and you just move on.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like you're saying, Klein with Giddens and Trayshon Ward last year, both of them were extremely productive. So you can definitely find there's definitely potential for some value between those running backs, especially if you're getting them for almost nothing. And like you said, if it doesn't work out early in the season, it's an easy drop, and there's plenty of other options on the waiver wire across college football.
Yeah, neither of these guys are shooting up in ADP right now in terms of like you have to get them for expensive prices. Another injury here. Sorry, guys. If you don't like injury talk, you got to stop listening to the show right now, because that's really kind of the main thing we'll be discussing today. It's a lot of these injuries. Colin Lacey, former wide receiver out of South Alabama, now at Louisville, out 6 to 8 weeks with a broken collarbone injury here. And for those of you keeping score at home, that basically locks him into missing 4 to 6 weeks of the regular season. So you're talking about a third to half the season. Sorry, Lacey, but this means I'm dropping you out of my rankings completely. I was already kind of moving him down more and more because, again, like, I just didn't like the fact that he was, you know, locked into that slot position for Louisville. I liked Chris Bell, Ja'Cory Brooks playing the other side. I just thought more and more, I'm like, this is really becoming a worse and worse value as the seasons went on. And so, but now that you're missing a third to half of the season, like I can't keep in good conscience keep Lacey in my rankings at all. And actually had a couple people asking me already, like what does this do to Bell? What does this do to Brooks and everything like that? I'm actually keeping Bell roughly the same because I was already very high on him. I had him as my wide receiver 32. I might bump him up a spot or two just because there's less competition there, especially to start the season. But I was already pretty much drafting Bell as my presumed wide receiver one for Louisville. And with Lacey out, that doesn't really change much there. Who it did affect is I actually did give Ja'Cory Brooks a small bump here. I had him as my wide receiver 85, jumped him up to my wide receiver 73 because I think it's going to be hard. Like, in my mind, I was thinking like, okay, Bell number one guy, and then Brooks and Lacey would be kind of battling for wide receiver two week in and week out there. But with Lacey out of the picture, like I said, a third to a half season here, I think Brooks is going to get more consistent production week to week here, especially again playing that secondary outside role. If you go and look at Brom's history, the slot wide receiver really outside of Rondale Moore ends up being the third or even fourth most targeted position, and those outside guys really end up being kind of the big playmakers there. And so I think this does give Brooks a little bit of a bump. I will also say, and I didn't put this in my notes, but I'm thinking about it now, this probably gives Mark Redmond a bump.
You stole it from me. I had that in mind too.
Sorry.
I had that in my little spiel.
I'll let you go then, Chris. Tell me about like how is this affecting your guys? But
well, I agree. I kind of agree with you there. I was like, I kind of looked at the outline and I was like, well, I mean, Brom and his tight ends at Purdue, there was definitely some production there, and I definitely would agree. Like, you're taking away, you're losing the targets from Colin Lacey. And I don't think there's like an obvious, I mean, I don't think there's an obvious slot receiver to take his spot, to take mm-hmm. his targets. So I think you're giving it mainly to Chris Bell. You're giving it to Ja'Cory Brooks. And then I was going to say Mark Redmond too. I think Bell, and you did mention you give him a slight bump, and I agree, give him maybe a little bump, because there's less competition for targets. So mm-hmm. it's more of the competition for targets bump that you get for him, whereas Ja'Cory Brooks is kind of like, well, he's probably the number two now. He's moving up a spot on the depth chart, and mm-hmm. that is where you get a bigger jump in the ADP or rankings overall. And then also, as I'm saying that, I agree that I think Mark Redmond should get a slight bump in rankings too, because it's just, you look at Jeff Brom's offenses in Purdue, there's the tight end does produce generally, or sorry, Jeff Brom. Yeah. Jeff Brom. Why I was looking at it. Sorry. Jeff Brom's offenses in, at Purdue, they produced, and he's the guy presumably for Louisville this year. And I feel like he deserves that bump too, especially with less competition for targets now.
No, I agree 100%. And I will say again, I'm barely bumping up Bell, but like, if you're somebody who is like in your rankings, like you haven't really made that big jump of like, you know, like, all right, I think Lacey will be the number one guy, and you've been kind of maybe targeting Bell a little bit later, maybe targeting Brooks a little bit later. This is the time to really bump those guys up a good amount, because clearly Lacey's not going to be the guy at this point.
Yeah.
And so you have to adjust at least one of those guys. You can pick Bell, you can pick Brooks. I don't really care. I'm team Bell, but I understand some people's love for Brooks. One of those guys has to move up your rankings a good amount, because clearly that's going to be the value in this offense at this point.
Yeah, I agree. I was actually like similar to you, a little lower on Lacey beforehand, so I had Brooks up in the rankings. At first I was on board with Brooks. I was kind of on board with him being the guy, but just, I kind of soured on a little bit over time. And I was interested in him in that draft, and you took him, I was going to pair him with Tyler Shuck late in my draft. And sure enough, around the turn, I couldn't let it get past you. And sure enough, you took him right before I was going to select. So, kudos to you. I think it could be a good pick, especially given the news here.
I already had Bell, so I was just hedging my bets a little bit there.
If
you notice that both of those picks there, I think I took Eckhouse and then I took Brooks immediately afterwards, where I was just hedging my bets with Mateer and Bell from earlier in the draft. I'm like,
just,
you know what?
Yeah.
We'll see what happens here. All right,
get the upside somewhere.
Exactly. All right, let's see. Let's move on to our next one here. Again, God bless the running backs right now, man. There is just so many running backs injured right now. Chip Trayunum, former Ohio State and Arizona State running back, now at Kentucky. He is out 3 to 4 weeks with a broken hand. So those of you counting at home, that's about 1 to 2 games missing here at least. Again, you know how injuries and re-injuring can happen so far. So that's at least 1 to 2 games that he will be missing to start the season. Two games that you would think that if he's the clear number one guy, like, if I recall, he is, like, or that's a couple of soft matchups early on in the season that he will no longer get to benefit from. And then if he does come back that week three, guess who he's playing? Georgia. And so, so that's a rough one for him to come back on. So you're potentially missing 3 games with him to start the season here.
Yeah, so, you have Southern Miss week in their first game, and then week one, and then South Carolina week two is their two. Their first two scheduled games before. So
two manageable games he's missing out on.
And that definitely takes a sixth of the schedule out already too, if they, assuming he misses 2 games.
And then a fourth of the schedule once you add in Georgia there in week three. And it's not looking great. And here's the thing. Chip Trayunum, like, there was a lot of talk in the preseason about he wasn't really breaking away like some people thought he was going to, right? There was a reason why Kentucky was potentially going after Penny Boone there. And there was still a lot to be figured out at the position here already, right? Dimi Sumo has been around for a while with Kentucky, former NC State running back there. He's been with Kentucky for a few years now. Jamarian Wilcox is a guy that pretty much almost a good chunk of the beat writers, as I was like researching this injury, we're saying, like, this is the dude that needs to step up, which I find interesting because a lot of them are really big on true freshman Jason Patterson early to start the year, but now they're kind of pointing at Jamarian Wilcox and saying, like, if Kentucky's running game is going to be as good, that's the guy that needs to step up there. So, clearly, with Trayunum now missing almost a fourth of the season here, he's going to take a big hit in my rankings. He went from RB28 to RB51 for me. I still believe in him. I'm still hoping that when he comes back that he can kind of earn his way back. But I cannot in good conscience recommend him as a potential starter for your teams right now. So, Chris, how are you kind of navigating this Kentucky running back situation?
So, yeah, from what I saw, there were some rumblings about sort of a committee even before the injury. Not a complete committee, but that worried me a little bit. Like you're saying, if they're pursuing other backs like Penny Boone, that's also cause for concern. I mean, it clearly doesn't show a ton of maybe it was just to add some depth to the backfield, but they already have that. You'd be looking at the pieces they have there. So if you're going after Penny Boone, it seems like you're looking for another contributing piece. I see, even with Trayunum, even if he's not, when he's back, I think he could become the main guy again. I haven't moved down to about number 77, so I'm a little lower than you as of now.
And honestly, I don't blame you.
Yeah, it just depends on what role he has when he comes back. And if one of these guys steps up in the interim, like, that's the thing, is being available, if you're producing when you're available, it's going to be tough, especially with the matchups you're saying. Like, the first two games, you get a good matchup. If Trayunum comes back in week three and somebody went off in the first 2 weeks, you can't just remove them from the equation. And so I don't think it would be an immediate, like, retaking of the role for Trayunum when he comes back. But at the same time, I could see it being more of a committee during his absence, where it's not one back that takes over and you're getting to see multiple backs here. And maybe Kentucky wants to try to explore in those earlier matchups. Obviously South Carolina is not going to be an easy, like, just don't have to worry about it game, but they're probably want to see what they have in the backfield with their other options. Just kind of, sure. So I could definitely see a situation where they're just like letting each of them get some work and then maybe go with a hot hand if somebody happens to step up and take on a role. So I could definitely see that being the case, where we're seeing more of a committee early in the season. And then once Trayunum comes back, we'll have to factor him in as well. And then from there, they'll figure it out. So I am moving him a little further down the rankings yet, because I'm not convinced he's going to immediately retake the starting role once he's back. And even if that you remove that Georgia game. Once that's done, I'm not sure he's like the guy in full once he's back.
No, I agree with you 100%, right? Again, if you're a big Trae Young fan right now, you are rooting so hard for nobody to really break out during those first couple of games, right? Because if Wilcox does step up, if Dimi Sumo just shows that he's a good all-around back, right? Like, that's going to make Trae Young coming in back in even harder. One, the staff might be conservative with bringing him back, right? Especially with Georgia, right? They'll probably hold him out another week at that point if they know they've got another guy they could potentially rely on. But even still, like, if they have somebody else they can rely on, easing Trae Young back in, especially if their goal is to make a good bowl game, if their goal is to potentially push for the playoff, right? Again, like, all you need is a 9-3 record, and Kentucky's shown they can be a 10-win team here in the past. I know their schedule isn't super great this year, but regardless, if that's their goal, right, then saving Trae Unum as long as they possibly can might be in their best interest. So we'll see. Again, I agree with you. Like, I moved him down to RB51. I probably could move him even lower. Like, this is a really, really tough hit to his ranking here.
Yeah, the old adage, the best ability is availability, and he doesn't have that early in the season, so gives
No,
the opening for others.
he does not. In a very similar situation with our next guy here, Harrison Whaley, running back out of Wyoming. Wyoming, what am I even talking about? Wyoming here. This was a dude that I thought was a really good value in a lot of drafts throughout the offseason. He was a running back that you could pretty consistently get in, like, 9, 10, 11 round range. A guy that I thought was pretty, based on the roles he was given last year, was pretty much locked in for 200 plus carries at Wyoming's offense. Well, unfortunately, now he is out until, quote, early in the season from the coaching staff here. And that's when the coaching staff kind of leads their press conference about this with, well, we know he won't be out for the full season. I'm like, well, that's not particularly great to hear. The good news is he underwent successful surgery, so it sounds like whatever the best case scenario that could have happened there did happen, and so we should see Whaley at some point during the season. But obviously, very similar to Trip Triano, this is a massive hit to his value. I had him RB47. I've moved him down to RB75, and quite frankly, he might be getting close to do not draft territory because of I just don't really know how long he's going to be out. The name that I was kind of one shocked. I did not know that this dude had transferred to Wyoming in the first place. But two, the name that was immediately named by 7220 Sports, which, by the way, is the best Wyoming beat reporter you can find out there. The name that he said needed to step up in Whaley's absence was former UNC running back DJ Jones. And so I have added DJ Jones because of that to my rankings right now. Because I think, similar to the Kentucky situation, right? If DJ Jones, named as the next guy up here, if he comes in and performs well right away for Wyoming, I don't know if there's really going to be a hurry to bring Whaley back, at least until the end of the season, right? And so I think he's worth taking a shot right now in drafts. Chris, how do you feel about the Wyoming backfield situation? How are you navigating this?
Yeah, I mean, I was looking at a different report from the official site from Ryan Thorburn, who has joined their site, and he talked about DJ Jones as well. He's ready for the spotlight, and from what I saw in the report there, it actually said something about Jones was with the first team to start the scrimmage before Whaley went down,
Oh, wow.
which to me makes me, I kind of have moved Whaley out of my rankings for that reason. I saw there's a report. I can send it your way if you want.
Absolutely.
From what I saw, it says the line here that I read that stuck out to me is Jones was with the first team to start the scrimmage before Whaley went down on his first carry with the second team. So that says to me that Jones might be the lead guy even when Whaley's back.
Hold
And if
on,
that's the case,
I'm just
I'm
gonna
just out.
go. Just gonna go update my rankings real quick. We're just gonna
Yeah.
move Jones up a little bit. That's actually crazy. I completely missed that.
Yeah, so I saw that. I made sure we add that to our news update too. It's just we want to note there that it's a big development. If Jones is the number one guy even before the injury, that could be the case when he's back. Even when Whaley's back. So, and obviously the news with Whaley is that it's early in the season, which is pretty open-ended. We don't really know what that means. We don't even know when he'll be back. It could be a week or two early in the season. It could be a month. We don't know exactly how long he'll be out for. So that definitely scares me off of Whaley. And if he's, and the fact that I saw that line in that report kind of just moves him out of my, he's like at 100 and something somewhere down there. He's out of my ranking. He's out of the meaningful rankings for me at this point. So yeah, that I would say that I would expect Jones by the end of the year probably to end up with more carries than Whaley based on that news. So that's where I'm at with it, I guess.
Wow.
Given that that line.
I'm glad you brought that up, because yeah, that definitely, let me reiterate now, if that is the case, I'm just going to put Jones where I had Whaley before, like an RB47. I think that's perfectly reasonable to think of at this point, because like you said, like if Jones was already kind of getting that RB1 role beforehand, I basically, that's where I had Whaley at already, so might as well just put, slide Jones right into there now. So look at that. Maybe I'm overreacting to news. Maybe it's too much on one report here, but like, I don't know. I feel like that's that's a pretty big note to have.
Yeah, and it was a team scrimmage too. It's not like just a practice. That was a scrimmage he was working with the first team. So it's notable. Like scrimmages are generally a little more of a dress rehearsal for the season than, I mean, it's an early scrimmage, but in general, scrimmages mean a little bit more than just a regular practice. So I guess I would take a little more weight out of a scrimmage result and the fact that it was in there beforehand within the scrimmage versus if it was just like a random practice where he's mixing in with the ones and then Whaley was with the twos for a bit, but it didn't, things can change. So I feel like scrimmages have a little bit more weight to them than others, but obviously, again, you don't want to just take one scrimmage and take it as gospel, and that's what it's going to be. Based on the way things are now, I'm on board with DJ Jones this year.
Yeah, I've basically seen from a lot of different teams that like the last scrimmage is always the one to really pay attention to, because that's usually almost the dress rehearsal before the actual game. And so if you see somebody being held out for that, they're most likely being held out for the game. If you see somebody starting with the ones in that, they're probably starting with the ones for the first game of the season. So again, obviously things change once the actual season hits and everything, but always something to pay attention to. Next guy up here, Cameron Cook, another potentially injured running back here at TCU, a guy I've loved all offseason. His ADP shot up the last couple of months here. Kind of a weird situation here. He was seen on the bike, as according to Steven Johnson over, I forget where he writes out from, but he's a TCU beat writer. Basically, he has said the last three practices that Cameron Cook was on the bike. And basically, when he asked Sonny Dykes about that, with Cook being held out there, that Dykes says Cam Cook, quote, has a little bit of a hamstring issue, and that the intent was to rest him and said he could have practiced today, but they are kind of holding him out. Which, again, to me, you can take it one of two ways. One, Dykes is trying to cover up something worse here, because it is kind of weird that even if you're holding somebody out for precautionary reasons, for him to be on the bike for three practices in a row tells me there's probably a little something more going on there. Or you can go the positive angle here and say, well, they're trying to hold him out because they know how important he's going to be for this team. They don't want to put him out there, you know, getting hit by his own guys and everything like that. So they're kind of keeping him on the side for right now, especially if there is some, quote, a little bit of a hamstring issue. So might as well just kind of let him rest up and everything. The way I'm viewing it right now, Cook's my RB38 right now. I'm just staying put with where he's at. Because, again, at RB38, you're looking at maybe a flex spot, but mostly a guy that you're drafting as, like, your fourth running back option there. And so he'd be probably riding the bench. If there is an issue, I'm willing to hold on to him for a week or two just to kind of figure out what things are going on there. I'm not really moving him because of this news. What about you, Chris? Are you changing anything with Cameron Cook here?
I mean, to be honest, I was a little lower on Cook than the consensus this year. Just I get the reasoning. Like, he's the most explosive. He is their number one. I've seen the reports in camp that he's been their number one. But I also saw reports earlier that they were setting up, like Trey Sanders, goal line vulture last year, and he'll be a goal line vulture again this year, and that I don't like. But obviously, you're not drafting him like a stud running back. He could easily go for not like a workhorse slash touchdowns everything kind of guy. He could be RB 38 easily. That's not a worry to me at that point. But I just, there was some where he was getting going way up in drafts, and I just wasn't ready for that because I saw Sanders. He was a vulture last year, and I think it's going to be the case last year. He had 40, or again this year, he had 48 carries last year and 6 touchdowns. So in Cam Cook is only 5'11", 195. So we get near the goal line. Let's go to Trey Sanders, 6'2", 215. And also I saw that Sanders was going to be involved a little bit in the, or they were setting up plays for passing plays for for Sanders in the passing game. So that there was a 24/7 report about, he kind of went through all of the players on the roster. I think, I'm not sure if it was all the players in the roster, but I was looking through, and he did a report on Cook and Sanders. And that was one of the things he kind of mentioned in the profile on Sanders, was that like Sanders was getting the goal line carries like last year, and also was getting targeted in the passing game, was having some plays drawn up for him as a receiver. And if Cook isn't as involved as a receiver, that would scare me a little bit. So not a ton. I mean, he didn't have a catch last year. We only had 16 carries. So it's not, nothing really much to take away from that. He wasn't really the lead dog like he is this year. So, and the situations he's playing may not have called for much passing. So I'm not taking away too much from that. I'm not going to discount him a ton, but if Sanders is more involved in the passing game than he was last year, then that would kind of detract a little bit from my Cam Cook value. But overall, if we're speaking on just this injury, so since I already had him a little lower, I don't think I'm going to move him any lower from that, unless there's a significant concern. There's more. I'd keep an eye on him throughout camp. If there's any hamstring injuries, can linger, and there's definitely chance for re-injury. Like, that's always the hamstring is always a tough one, because that's one that can constantly pop back up. But as long as it he's back in practice before the season, you're drafting now, so there's, again, it's a risk situation. I don't think it's a very high one in this scenario, given what has been reported, but it if you don't have much tolerance for risk, maybe you want to pass on them just because you don't want to take the chance that there is something more to it. But yeah, for me, I'm not moving him from where I had him in the ranks based on just the hamstring injury, the minor hamstring injury, which is what it seems like.
Yeah, and the next guy we'll talk about here is a very, very similar situation with Darius Taylor, who also appears to be dealing with his own minor hamstring injury. He did leave practice last Tuesday limping and with ice. According to the coaching staff, they're saying nothing serious. But again, like you mentioned, this is a hamstring issue. These soft tissue injuries, man, they can linger, and they can be a problem. And this was what Taylor was kind of dealing with at the end of last year. And so if you're worried about these nagging injuries from Taylor throughout the season, for Taylor, like, this is the last thing you want to hear in the weeks leading up to the regular season. I got my fingers crossed. I'm probably going to move Taylor down just a little bit because of this, right? But I don't think I'm going to move him out of my, like, elite tier of running backs, right? He's not going to exit my top 10 here. I'm probably going to put him at RB8 behind, or RB7. Yeah, RB7 behind DJ Giddens. I had him at RB4. Dropping him down just a little bit because I still think the volume is worth the risk there as the RB1 for PJ Flex system. But Chris, how are you navigating Darius Taylor here with this injury situation, potential injury situation?
I mean, it's, again, similar situations I've been saying on all of these, is any of these guys with especially hamstring injuries, they're, if you're worried about the hamstring injury now, it's a minor one. He's also missed 8 games last year with an injury, and now he's adding a hamstring injury before the start of this season. If you're one who's against taking those kind of risks, I don't know that you want to go for Darius Taylor at this point, but I'm not moving him down a ton because it is just a minor one. I also had him, again, we're touching on a lot of guys that I was a little bit lower on than I'm not like moving him out of my top 10 situation, but I was a little lower than some on him. So I think I had him around 6 or 7 before, because when he played last year, the three big games he played, he had four technically in the end where he had big games, but like to start the year, he had Eastern Michigan, North Carolina, and Northwestern. The volume's there. Like, I'm not worried about the volume, but those efficiency numbers, like 5.8 a carry, 6.3 a carry, 6.4 a carry. He was also facing the defenses that ranked 118th in rushing yards per game allowed, Eastern Michigan, 93rd, North Carolina, and 70th for Northwestern. So, those aren't necessarily a great representation of the meat of the schedule. He did play against Iowa, and he only averaged 3.7 yards a carry in that game. So there might be some concern about a little bit more about efficiency when he's facing, like he faced Michigan, or he would have faced Michigan last year. I have to again look at. I haven't looked super closely at the schedule again for Minnesota, so maybe it is a favorable schedule this year, and they miss a lot of the big dogs. But yeah, in general, I think Darius Taylor, I'm not moving him down necessarily because of the injury, but I was a little lower to start. And if I'm one that is against the hamstring, I might be a little bit more down, like more willing to move Darius Taylor a couple spots down than I am for Cook, just because of the injury history there. So that's what I think scares me more, is that he's missed time already last year. He only played six games. Is there some kind of durability concern? He's already got an injury, and again, hamstring injury is something that that can pop up again during the season. So I think I would maybe be more willing to move Taylor down a couple spots, and whereas Cook, I'm probably sticking where he is, especially when you're investing a high draft pick in a player.
Agreed.
You already have. He's only going into his second year, and he's already got a number of injuries under his belt. That's kind of scary to do when you're trying to invest so much into a player. So for that reason, then maybe I'll move him down and take a chance on somebody else ahead of him.
But I think again, for a lot of people who are big on Darius Taylor already, right? Like you were already baking this risk in. Like I never drafted
True.
Darius Taylor without drafting another running back in either the first or the second round, whichever area I got Darius Taylor in. I was always pairing him up with like a really safe running back to go along with him, right? And so I think that if you already had that mindset, you're probably not moving him a ton. I think this just almost solidifies him as like you grab a running back in the first round and then you see if Taylor falls to you in the second round and then you're willing to go after that there. Next guy, we'll
Yeah,
just oh, go ahead, sorry.
go ahead. No, sorry. I thought you were. Yeah, go ahead. I think we're good. I'm done. I'm good talking with the Taylor. I'm done with the Taylor talk, so I'm good to go for
Done with
the
Taylor
next one.
talk. Next guy here. Enough of all this negativity, man. Enough of this these running backs that are getting injured, man. Let's talk about a guy who's coming back and is, quote, expected to be full speed in practice. That was said on August 8th. So it looks like by now Mark Fletcher should be good to go for Miami. And for those of you that need a little recap, he was injured in the bowl game with a foot injury, missed all of spring basically, and is now, like I said, expected to be full speed here in the fall camp. I got Damian Martinez as my RB14. ADP has him as RB11 coming into the season here. How do we want to navigate this here, Chris? Because Mark Fletcher had a really good finish to end the year last year against some pretty solid defenses here. Like looking at it here, we had, 23 carries, 115 yards against NC State, which was a good one. 16 carries and 47 yards, not super great against FSU, but against Louisville, another good defense. 17 carries, 126 yards, and two touchdowns. Boston College, 12 carries, 44 yards, and a touchdown. Again, nothing fantastic. A little bit up and down there, but kind of similar to Darius Taylor, right? You were talking about like some of those bad efficiency numbers against good teams last year. Both Fletcher and Taylor, you're talking about true freshmen. So like there's room to improve for both of these guys here. But regardless, Fletcher's coming back to Miami now. A lot of people are drafting Martinez as like, clear RB1. Without Fletcher there was going to be nobody really behind him that was going to siphon away a ton of carries there. But Fletcher is back now, it looks like. How are you navigating this situation, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, I spoke about it just a bit ago that we're touching on a lot of the guys that I was lower on the consensus, and Martinez is one of them, and that Mark Fletcher was the reason for it. Now, I guess there was some concern whether or not Fletcher would be ready for the start of the season, but now that he is, I think that's it's justified, because Fletcher actually graded out really well on like Pro Football Focus. And I just, and where Martinez was previously at Oregon State, he was just the bell cow. And Cristobal likes to use his running backs, multiple running backs there at Miami. And I was looking up the numbers recently, and since Cristobal at Miami in the last 3 years, they haven't had a back with more than 145 carries in any of those three seasons. So I'm not saying that I think Martinez could pass that number. It might be a situation where it's just they didn't feel they had a great true number one back to do that. But I think Fletcher's good enough to siphon away more carries than people have been taking into account during the draft season more recently, or previously when he was higher up. I had him a little lower just because I thought I was worried more about Fletcher than I guess more than more people, most of the people were. So for that reason, I would say yes. Basically I'm a little down on a little more lower on Damian Martinez and willing to move him down with Fletcher back and healthy and part of the mix. So I think that, I would, that's what I would say. I'd say I'm further down on Martinez than a lot of people. I guess when I was doing my projections, I was kind of counting on Fletcher being there. So I'm not moving him down further because of that. But I would say that I'm always lower on Martinez because I think Fletcher can be part of that backfield and a significant contributor as part of that backfield.
See, for me, I want to move Damian Martinez lower in my rankings here. My problem that I'm kind of running into is that he's really in this tier where there's a lot of very similar backs to him right now in terms of that idea of, like, theoretically, on paper, he should be the RB1. He should get more carries than you would typically see in a committee, but there's guys that are just good enough to really potentially siphon away that ceiling, right? Because again, I have him right next to Gavin Sawchuk at Oklahoma with Javonte Barnes coming back and everything like that, right? Like, there's a potential situation there. Ishmael Mahdi, I mean, I love Ishmael Mahdi last year, but they brought in those two running backs from UTEP that are expected to get a lot of work this season as well. Quinton Cooley, we know for a fact that Liberty wants to get him less carries this year to kind of keep him healthier. Jordan James at Oregon, like, theoretically, I love Jordan James as an athlete, as a player, but I think people are kind of assuming that a staff that is typically split carries, even with a guy like Bucky Irving last year, right? Like, people are kind of assuming that, like, oh, this just means James is going to be the number one guy there, but I don't think that's necessarily the case. So I'm like, I'm looking at Martinez in this range. I'm like, I want to move you down, but the guys that are around you are all kind of facing a similar situation because of this. So I don't think I'm actually going to move him down that much. It's just, he might be more skippable to me as an option in drafts. Does that make sense? Right? Like, it's like, yeah, I know my rankings tell me to take him here, but I'm kind of more willing to go after maybe a wide receiver here. Maybe willing
maybe
to kind
the
of
tier
vary.
You want to avoid just as a whole. Like, you want to avoid these guys that have the risk of not, the ceiling may not be quite as high as people think it is. And the floor might be there, but the ceiling is not quite as high as you were hoping it would be.
So, all right, next guy up here. Finally, guy I know you're pretty high on here, Chris, so we can talk positive about someone for once here. But Chris Hilton, wide receiver out of LSU, unfortunately, is dealing with a minor ankle injury in practice. Before this, Hilton looked like he was one of the dudes locking down one of these outside positions at LSU. That's kind of been the position that's been the most flux on this offense throughout the offseason, maybe outside of running back, right? And because, you know, Lacy was pretty locked into the slot. And then you had Hilton, you had Xavier Thomas, CJ Daniels, other guys kind of battling it out there for that outside position. But Hilton, again, looked like he was kind of locking down one of those outside positions. A lot of great fall camp reports for Hilton coming in. But now he's down with a minor ankle injury. Brian Kelly says he doesn't think it's all that serious and that sitting him the rest of practice was more precautionary than anything else. Chris, how are you reading this?
I mean, there's nothing here in terms of the injury that I'm too troubled by. I don't see it. Obviously, it's another situation where you want to monitor it, make sure there's nothing more serious that comes of it. As long as he's back in practice ahead of the season, I wouldn't be too worried. And I saw those Hilton reports, I saw it seemed like he had separated himself in spring almost, like he was the number two. Like everyone was, the reporters from what I had seen were saying he's actually the number two guy, and it's Xavion Thomas and CJ Daniels and even Aaron Anderson at the time who were fighting for that other starting role. So I was, when Underdog brought that best ball, I was grabbing Hilton super late in those best ball drafts because I had seen those reports and I was on Hilton at that time. Obviously, that's carried over into the fall, which is good news. You want to, like you said, that steady beat drum or drum beat
Drumbeat.
of reports coming out. That you're getting, and that's what you're seeing from him. And as long as there's nothing more with the injuries so far, I haven't seen anything. I'm still on board with going for Hilton as potentially the number two receiver behind Kyron Lacy in that offense this year. From what I've seen, I wouldn't be shocked if he ends up being the second most productive receiver out of that group. So yeah, like they're saying, I'm definitely on board with Hilton this year.
Honestly, I think, again, I do think there's a world where Hilton ends up becoming the number one wide receiver, potentially, at least in
It's
terms of
not, yeah.
production, right? Because, like,
It's not like you
Brian,
have, yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
I was saying, like Brian Thomas was a top 12 wide receiver last year. And, like, we all kind of assume Lacy, because, again, this is kind of the safest floor. He kind of locked in his starting role early there. He was a starter among the three guys last year, right? But, like, those outside receivers were really where the offense shone last year. And most people agree that Garrett Nussmeier is a better passer than Daniels was. And so potentially able to take care of those outside guys even a little better than Daniels was. Now, Daniels was just on fire last year. But even still, like, I agree with you. I think regardless of this minor ankle injury, he's still worth a shot. He's going late in drafts, right? Like, you can get him round 15 plus while Lacy's going up in, like, the round 6-7 range. And so I think no real strategy change needed here with Chris Hilton. Just some, like you said, something to monitor.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I don't see anything to change there. And like you're saying, there's definitely the upside there. Whereas, I mean, you see the talent that Daniels is at the next level even. But Daniels was also a runner, and I don't think Nussmeier is quite the same. So there could be more, even a slightly heavier passing volume. I wouldn't say that it's that I wouldn't maybe. I mean, it's I and there's I think Nussmeier could be a solid passer, and like you're saying, Hilton seems like a guy who could be the next sort of maybe not first round talent, Brian Thomas, but could still be that deep threat that they're looking for in the offense.
Yep, I would agree with that. All right, next up, again, going back to the positive here, Mitchell Evans, the tight end out of Notre Dame, injured his ACL at the end of October last season. According to the coaching staff, he was held out of the scrimmage, but the beat reporters were told that he could have played if it was an actual game. I have been hesitant to draft Mitchell Evans all offseason because, again, you tear your ACL at the end of October and you're looking at coming back here right at the end of August. That's roughly 10 months on the dot. And obviously, you know, medical technology has gotten great in terms of the, like, rehabbing these ACLs. But I think a lot of people, in my opinion, are kind of jumping a little bit too positively on this news. Like, just because a guy is quote unquote ready to play doesn't mean we're going to see them return to form with, like, I mean, shoot, just look at Brock Bowers last year, right? Look at him in the SEC championship game. Look at Ladd McConkey in the SEC championship game. Just because they were out there doesn't mean that they were back 100%. Like, they were, like, just because a guy is thrown out there does not mean that we're going to get what we were getting out of Mitchell Evans to start last season. And so, personally, again, obviously great news. Happy for Mitchell Evans here that apparently this rehab's going really, really well and that he'll probably see the field early. But I think, again, people still have to remember this is an ACL injury, and a lot of times this takes, you know, athletes can come back the next year and play, but in terms of getting back to their previous form, it almost takes almost up to 2 years sometimes to see that. And so I think people need to just be a little bit more hesitant when they read news like this. Chris, how are you handling this news with Evans?
Yeah, I think I would agree with you there. Evans, just any player, it's not just an Evans specific situation, but any player coming back from an ACL or major knee injury, there's there's been numerous times where they aren't producing at the same level even for the first full year of coming back from the injury. So there's definitely some concern there. I don't think he's not going off the charts on boards, but he's still going to a spot where it's, you're going to have to assess your risk tolerance again, because it's a situation where you don't know what level of play you're going to get from him. So if you're taking Evans, maybe you want to make sure you get a safer tight end available as another option, someone that you know will be able to produce consistently if he doesn't work out, because Evans is a situation where he's kind of a boomer bust. He could end up doing really well and showing back into form, or he could end up, like you said, like a shell of himself, the way Bowers and McConkey were at the end of last year. So I think that it's kind of a situation where it's a very risky tight end, and you want to make sure you at least back that up with somebody who you can count on if things don't work out there.
I agree with you. Again, if you're gonna take a shot on Evans, I think it's a great guy to grab if you grabbed one of those early safe tight ends like an Aronde Getz and like a Harold Fannin, like a Jake Bringstuhl, like a Luke Lachey, guys like that, where you know you're getting what you're getting out of them, and then you just grab Evans as your potential home run hit. And that way you have two elite tight ends there, right? Otherwise, I'm pretty much not touching them. Last news we'll kind of touch on here outside of some of these quarterback competitions that are starting to get shaken out. Some people have been asking for an update on Stephen McBride, like what to kind of expect from him this season. Well, we now know, according to Hawaii News' Now's Kyle Shinnen, he reports that Stephen McBride has returned to practice with the Rainbow Warriors. This is following his reduction of his sentencing from a felony down to a misdemeanor. But it does seem like there is now some additional issues with McBride, with some eligibility issues not related to his arrest that might be keeping him off the field. I don't know if that's academic or if there is some legal issues there potentially that keep him off the field. But regardless, we do know he's back practicing with the team, but it seems like there's going to be issues coming down the line with him just playing. I'm personally on the fence of, I'm washing my hands of this. I don't want to try to play this game. I don't want to, like, I know he's going very late in a lot of drafts right now, but I still see people drafting him in like the 10th, 11th round in drafts sometimes, thinking like, oh, I get like a 4 or 5 round discount on this guy. And I'm like, I don't know if I really want to deal with that, especially against 10th round. You're still probably grabbing, you know, your potential third starter at wide receiver, a potential flex option. I just think it's too much risk. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I think I'd be a lot more comfortable with it if I was drafting him as like a bench, one of my first bench players or something, to where I have a roster solidified and now I'm just taking shots more, trying to find guys with upside. And I feel like if that's where he falls, then I'd be a little more interested in it. But I don't know if I want him as one of my starting wide receivers going into week one for fantasy. I don't necessarily want, we don't know. He could end up not playing at all. And you could go from, even if he does play, I've seen reports that they're intend to rotate receivers more this year. And that's definitely possible because they believe their receiver room's a little deeper. And we saw them on the field all the time last year. And if there is a little more rotation in receivers, that could even if he's playing, he might not produce at the same level he does last year. So we're not guaranteeing that same production, and you have to factor in that we don't know if he's going to play at all or part of the season. For me, I'm not drafting him as a starting receiver this year. I don't think I can take that into my, wouldn't be part of my game plan when I'm going into a draft.
Yeah, I understand people trying to like potentially get the value there, but like you said, there's more reasons than just the legal issue here to potentially worry about with him. Like, so I'm personally just washing my hands. I've got him out of my rankings right now because I'm not dealing with this. So, all right, that's it for just the news by like item by item news section. The last section here we'll kind of go through relatively quickly here because there's a lot of quarterback competitions we've kind of had our eye on that are really kind of coming to fruition here. Some kind of obvious, but you know, they did feel the need to make an announcement, so clearly there was something going on there. One of these legitimately did surprise me, so I'll run through these all real quick. We got four quarterback competitions that kind of settled themselves over the weekend. We have Jake Garcia. is now named the starter at East Carolina. We have Riley Leonard named the starter there at Notre Dame. At Ohio State, Will Howard has won that competition. And then at Wisconsin, we had Tyler Van Dyke win the competition for the Badgers. And then by Monday, so by the time you're listening to this, we'll probably have an announcement of some kind. We will know who the starting quarterback for Washington State is. I mentioned on our quarterback crash course series that that was one of the competitions I had my eye on the most, and we'll have that resolved by tomorrow. So kind of go through these real quick. I think probably we'll go through the easy ones here real quick. Riley Leonard, I don't think anybody was really expecting potential him not to be the starter, but given the fact that he missed a good chunk of spring, I think that door was open a little bit, but very quickly in the fall here, it looks like, yeah, they're rolling with Leonard. Will Howard, there was kind of some talk of potentially Brown being given a shot there. I don't think anybody's really surprised that Will Howard ended up winning this job in the end. And then Tyler Van Dyke, that was one of those fake competitions, I feel like. They bring him in, they make it seem like that him and Locker, Braden Locker, battling it out, but I don't think there's any real surprise at all that Van Dyke wins this job. Chris, with those three guys there, with Leonard, Howard, and Van Dyke, any surprise to you there? Anything that kind of changes your rankings potentially? What do you think?
I wouldn't say there's much surprise. I will say that having like Leonard and Howard, I just kind of assumed, and I also Van Dyke, I assumed he would win the job in the end. I think it was kind of a safe assumption for most people is that they were all going to win it. I would say following having being from Wisconsin, Madison, I did follow that competition a little bit, and it did seem like they were giving Locke a legitimate shot. But from what I heard, just like early in fall camp, Van Dyke just kind of separated himself, and from that point on, it was just his job. And I think there's not really much to take away from those. Like you say, those are kind of all expected outcomes of those jobs. So I think most people were projecting them as if that was the case when you were going into those battles. So I don't think, as you say, there's not really much to take into account for those guys.
The East Carolina quarterback job legitimately shocked me when that news came out, because all offseason I have read that it's like it was a back and forth battle between Garcia and Hauser the entire time. And usually what happens in that situation is the younger guy, when there's a tie between two different positions, gets the nod. Because again, with the older guy, you feel like they've already kind of reached their ceiling for the most part. Yes, they have a lot of experience, but with Garcia, you haven't really seen a lot of starting experience outside of a little bit of time at Miami there, right? Versus Hauser, got some experience last year at Michigan State, right there with Garcia neck and neck. I really thought that he was going to be the one that would win out on the job. And of course, there's still the chance that, you know, Garcia doesn't do well. Maybe Hauser gets his chance later. But right now, I got to kiss a lot of underdog best ball. What am I talking about? They don't have G5 guys. But a lot of best ball late shots at this quarterback competition. Goodbye. Yeah. What was your reaction to this?
I mean, yeah, I guess it was a situation where it shouldn't affect teams too much, other than like the fact that it's these deep drafts, like best ball, or maybe you're one of your last quarterbacks you're taking on a deep fantasy draft. So it shouldn't be a huge adjustment, but like you're saying, I think you kind of just place, if you had Hauser at X spot in your rankings and you were expecting him to win, you just move Garcia into that spot in the rankings, and you kind of just replace one with the other, and neither of the two are going to be major fantasy contributors this year. Even Garcia winning the job, obviously is going to be the more relevant fantasy contributor. But I don't think it's a situation where you're now drafting Garcia super high because because he's won the job or anything. So
no, I agree. Yeah. I basically just took Hauser out of my rankings, put Garcia right where I had Hauser, because I don't think there's really that much of a difference between the two guys here. All right, Chris, we got some breaking news here. So before we get to the Wazoo guys here, San Diego State has named true freshman quarterback Danny O'Neill as the starting quarterback for their opener against Texas A&M Commerce. So that's a shot in my heart for all the AJ Duffy shots that I took on in drafts and my hype for him earlier this offseason. But that's big news. That's going to be a pretty big impact on my rankings here moving forward. And again, I think that is, again, the talk all offseason, right, was that, you know, AJ Duffy was kind of the leader in the clubhouse, but, you know, this true freshman, Danny O'Neill, he was kind of nipping at his heels more than you would expect a true freshman to be doing so. And I think kind of what we were just talking about with Eastern Carolina, I do think that eventually you just kind of got to a tie. And I think Sean Lewis is just kind of saying, like, all right, I'm just going to go with the younger guy here. I'm going to go with the guy that potentially has more upside for my system here, a guy that I recruited. Now, he recruited AJ Duffy as well, but that was out of the transfer portal. This is a guy that he grabbed out of high school. And so, yeah, breaking news. Danny O'Neill is your official starting quarterback for San Diego State. Chris, what's your reaction to this news?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's interesting with getting into the Sean Lewis offense and how fast they're going to go, Aztec fast. I think you got to definitely take a look at him in drafts now. I mean, he's listed as a dual threat quarterback coming out, so he could be a guy that can move a little bit, but it's going to be mostly I don't know. I think he, like you're saying, maybe if you where you had Duffy, maybe you put Danny O'Neill in that spot now, right? Kind of what you have to do.
That is what I'm doing as we speak.
So I think, yeah, I guess that's what we kind of do, and wherever that happens to land you is where that lands you with O'Neill now, and I think you kind of roll with that, and I would be interested in later rounds of drafts, just given the team context there and the new coach coming in and what scheme they're going to be running this year, the faster offense. So I think that's an interesting get, and especially like you're saying, if you're doing a slow draft right now, that's in your later rounds of your draft or wherever you are in your draft, as long as wherever you have Duffy, if Duffy's off the board already, O'Neill should be coming off the board soon. So exactly. I'd say that's where you should be looking, be paying attention to the news. And while you're doing drafts, make sure you're keeping on top of that, because right now you could get O'Neill at a potentially discounted price from where you would have to draft him, presumably going forward, now that he's the starting quarterback.
Yep, I am currently going to the best ball draft that I'm in right now, and I am adding O'Neill to the very top of my queue, because guess who I drafted in that league? So, yeah, like you said, gotta pivot. Gotta pivot. Yep. So, all right, and then the last one here, again, John Mateer versus Zevi Eckhouse, again, probably the most watched quarterback competition for college fantasy this year. Based on recent reports, it seems like Mateer was kind of pulling away a little bit. There was a lot of talk about, again, him having the dual threat ability, him having the bigger arm out of the two, and more importantly, in recent practices, he was the less turnover prone of the two quarterbacks. Now, here's the unfortunate thing. We were told that there was going to be, like, the decision would be made after this weekend's scrimmage, and we know for a fact that in this scrimmage Mateer turned it over twice. Now Eckhouse also turned it over, but he only turned it over once. Do I think that's going to change anything? Probably not, but I do think it is kind of still concerning that we're not seeing an improvement in that turnover proneness between either of these quarterbacks, really. And I do think this can potentially hurt them fantasy wise now, hopefully them going against the Mountain West competition during the season rather than Pac-12 probably helps them out a little bit, but even still, like, probably not as high on this offense as I, you know, was even just a couple of weeks ago, but just because of that. But Chris, what are you expecting the outcome of this competition to be? Do you think it's still worth grabbing both Eckhouse and Mateer, even if Mateer's named the starter, because maybe we see a quarterback switch at one point during the season? How do you navigate this?
I mean, I think I would just draft whoever wins the competition and just kind of, I don't think other people, unless you have Mateer, I find it hard to believe anyone's going to just pick up Eckhouse just to have him. So I feel like he'd be available to you at a later date to potentially grab if you need, whoever wins, sorry, we don't have a winner yet, but whichever one wins, the other one should be available on waivers later on. I mean, maybe you won't end up getting him, but I'm just taking a risk on whoever wins and then saving my bench spots elsewhere. But yeah, like you said, this was in competition. I've been drafting shares of Mateer in a lot of the best balls with the assumption hoping that he's going to win. I haven't been taking Eckhouse because I just like to take shots at other spots when I'd rather have end up with two starting quarterbacks somewhere than end up with just one of a good one. If I lose out, I lose out. It's a risk, but I'm still taking my chances at the player that I think will win the job, and then I'm taking shots elsewhere to try to get extra value from other spots. So that's the way I approach it. And I think we just wait till Monday, I believe. You said tomorrow. Yeah, that's when they're going to be announcing it. So I think you have to get your shares now. I feel like whoever wins the job, maybe even if Mateer wins the job, maybe he goes up a little bit.
Yeah, I wouldn't be
Obviously,
surprised at
Eckhouse
all.
would skyrocket if he wins the job. So that either way, you got to, that again, keep your eyes and ears to the just peeled for the news coming out on there. And I will mention one other one that I'm a little interested in. I took a shot at the end of the draft is just Jacksonville State and Rich Rod's offense. I know that there might go multiple quarterbacks. That's definitely the risk. So, but like if you're going like super late in a draft, like why not take a shot at one of Rich Rod's quarterbacks? And for me, it's been Logan Smothers, I guess. I'll take a shot at him super late in a draft. He might not win in the job in the end, but if he ends up being a starter, he could be a value at how late you can get him for basically almost the last round of any draft. So, or at least late in the drafts anywhere. So that's the other guy. But yeah, in terms of the Mateer Eckhouse situation, I'm taking the shot on the player that I think will win the competition for now, and then tomorrow I'll draft the player that whoever wins it, and I'm probably just gonna let the other one sit on the waivers or and hope that my guy keeps the job for the year.
I have way too many Mateer shares and I've been hyping them up way too much this offseason. So if it comes out tomorrow and it's Eckhouse, I will be banging my head against the wall. But no, I fully trust it'll be Mateer tomorrow. But we'll see. We'll see. I would have said yesterday that AJ Duffy is probably my pick for the job at San Diego State, and look how that turned out. So all good. Well, Chris, you have been awesome, man. Appreciate you coming on to the show. We're pretty much finishing up here. Again, obviously, you do great work with RotoWire and the stuff you're able to provide to Fantrax with the projections and the news items and everything like that. What other stuff that can people expect from you guys over at the RotoWire team for college fantasy this season?
I mean, in terms of college fantasy, we have weekly articles. We have waiver wire, like pickup ads, start sit each week. We highlight a few players from each conference that you can start, that we are like start for sure starting, for sure sitting. We do weekly daily fantasy articles, daily fantasy articles. We do sports betting articles. But for fantasy, yeah, we mainly every week we do the start sit, and we do the waiver wire pickups are the biggest two articles every week. So keep an eye on those. We have two great writers that produce those on a weekly basis. And then, yeah, plenty of other offerings also for college football for those that are fans of whatever avenue you're a fan of the fantasy game for college. We have you covered. So thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, man. I was saying at the end of last season, after you almost took away the FSGA championship from me, that I'm like, well, this student needs to come onto the show at one point if he's gonna push me this hard in a league like this. So I'm glad I could finally get you on here, man. It was an absolute blast having you on. Again, go check out their work over at RotoWire. These guys have been doing great work. With that, we've come to the end of our show. I want to thank all of you out there for listening. If you have not already, go ahead and leave a like, a comment, and a subscribe if you are watching this on the YouTube side of things. And if you're on the podcast side of things, make sure you follow the show and leave a 5-star review wherever you can, whether that be on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify. Make sure you guys check out the rest of the Campus Canton Podcast Network for shows ranging on pretty much anything you can think of related to the college fantasy game. We'll see you guys back here next Monday when, guess what, guys? We'll have games to break down and games to preview. That's how close we are to the season. So get ready, buckle up. It's about to hit ludicrous speed around here. Until then, really appreciate all of you guys, and I hope you have a wonderful and blessed week. See y'all.